Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. This podcast is for you if you have an insane drive to find the truth of things. It's not the good answers that we seek, but the good questions. I interview a range of different guests from many different fields, all with the intention to uncover the simple truths that are hidden in plain sight. Most people don't want to go there. I go there. My guests go there, and you benefit. Please let me know if you enjoy these episodes, and as always, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. My guest today is Bowtied Mara. He runs an agency for online marketing, SEO, PPC, and email lead management, as well as some development stuff, including automation. And many of us know him from his blog about Argentina and his tweets about Argentina. And I've definitely found a lot of interesting content from you and a lot of interesting insights. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. It's great to be here.
So how did you end up in Argentina?
It was almost 20 years ago. I was studying Spanish literature and a lot of Latin American literature as well at the university. And then I was just really interested in moving to Latin America. I already lived in Spain for a while. And I was also studying Portuguese on the side. And basically there I met my now ex-wife from Brazil. She was studying in Buenos Aires, doing a master's here. And then, you know, we got married, moved here. After a few years, split up. And then a few years later, I met my current wife. And I've been, you know, living here ever since, very happily, now with two daughters. So, yeah, it's been quite a trip from the Netherlands, because that's where I'm originally from. But, yeah, I'm very happy so far. And I don't think about moving back to Europe anytime soon.
Yeah, that's great. I love that Brazil is also in there, because that's how I'm here, is that I was in Brazil. And it's much harder to, and I've been coming to Brazil for many years, and I love that country. I love the culture. But it's a few things that are difficult about it, including the visa. So on this last trip, I go for 6 months, but they only let me stay for 3 months. And so I had to mad dash to Buenos Aires, after very, very unsuccessful multiple visits to the large urbanist, brutalist buildings that the Brazilian bureaucracy, and they told me that I had to go within a month. And so I quickly got a flight to Argentina and then arrived right before a political revolution. And I'm now stuck here in the best possible way. I love how different Argentina and Brazil are, but in ways that I find endlessly amusing and fun. Do you go to Brazil a lot?
So I haven't been in a few years, but I used to go, you know, twice a year. And, you know, still have contact with my my ex-family there. You know, we're good friends, etc. So left everything on good terms. I love Brazil. My idea was always to, once she finished her master's here, we would move back to Sao Paulo. That's where I initially moved all of my stuff. And then when we split up, I had to move all the stuff from Sao Paulo to Buenos Aires, because then I decided to stay here because I had a visa and I didn't have anything in Brazil yet. That move from Sao Paulo to Buenos Aires was twice as expensive as Rotterdam, Sao Paulo.
and was it just taxes from the Argentine side?
It was taxes and the whole handling fees, basically. So yeah. Everybody in between took a bite, and it just turned out to be twice as expensive.
Oh my God. The last time I spent time in Brazil, those last 3 months I was there, I realized that the perfect metaphor for Brazil is a very, very attractive girlfriend who's extremely high maintenance. Basically, so
that's a good metaphor.
Whereas Argentina, and then one of my local friends down here, he has been saying that he took that and he said, so Brazil is like the mistress and Argentina is like the wife, basically. That's what I feel like. Like, this city draws me in a way that's really stable, basically, but totally unstable politically and economically speaking.
Talk more about that. It's strange how that works, because I had the same kind of feeling. You know, Brazil seems to me sort of as the US of South America. It's so huge, so big, and it's like really hard to kind of get roots there and, you know, set up a life, and everything seems like super complicated. Whereas in Argentina, it is complicated as well. There's a lot of bureaucracy and, but there's always an easier way around it, or, people just don't care as much. And I do see that in Brazil, people walk much more in line with rules, et cetera, and, are much more obedient tax citizens, so to say, versus Argentina. And yeah, it does seem like even though there's, 200 plus percent inflation in Argentina, it seems like a lot stabler, in the sense that you don't have to watch your back all the time. It's a lot safer. Everything works despite all the economic mayhem. And yeah, that's been this way, ever since I moved here in 2005. So I've seen a lot of different stages. Even like back then, there wasn't that much inflation yet. And I started out here, working in a peso salary. I did do some online stuff, but I hadn't really figured out that that was not the way to do it. So I started working at an agency locally. I was earning about, $1,000 a month or something. And it just became harder and harder to get by just because of inflation was starting to pick up. I think back then it was about 30% a year or something. And but salaries didn't keep up, and they've certainly been obliterated by now. So yeah, that's a tough part. If you have to sort of depend on the local economy, it's really, really tough. So, I understand people that want to leave, that want to go to Europe or the States and just make more money or have a better life economically. But if you're able to work online and turn it around and get clients from abroad and income from abroad, then it's a completely different story.
That's really interesting. And it really mirrors my experience here of remote work. I came here with this job that was nice. It was a great job. I was a remote, totally remote job, which comes with its own challenges because it was also a hyper-growth scaling company. It is a hyper-growth scaling company, and scaling in remote is a wild, wild challenge that doesn't show up until you get to 150 people. But then once you pass blow past 150 people, all of a sudden remote work becomes a huge liability. Unless you can think very creatively, but it also might be a human nature type of thing. And then, yeah, no, it, but then that also ties in with the Argentines, because the Argentines who know how to do it, who know how to figure out how to get income from abroad, have the best of both worlds, as we both have the best of both worlds, because they can live in Argentina, which has a higher quality of life. And I'm not only speaking economically, I'm also speaking like in terms of the culture here. People value quality of life, as long as you can afford it, basically. What do you think of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what most people who've never been to Argentina don't really understand is the fact that the quality of life and what your geo arbitrage basically can buy you, quality of products, et cetera, and especially of course in the food segment, restaurants, et cetera, is just so great. Same thing with tourist activities, et cetera. It's really there's a lot to do, and it's all very nice. But of course, you do have to have the money for it. But it's still priced at a range where most middle class Argentines can still have access to that. It is becoming a lot harder though, because inflation is really getting out of control. Or it's actually going down now, but it spiked, I think at almost 300% year over year, and slowly it's coming back down, but that will take some time to fizzle out.
And that's, I would love to talk about that, because I was expecting to have a little bit more time in this world of having a geo arbitrage, and then Malay took over, which I was very excited about, but I knew that Malay wasn't going to be an improvement in my personal situation. I was very much rooting for it in terms of where the country's going, and well, and this is, I would like to question that as well. I know that you're also a supporter of Malay, and or at least I assume so. And I'd like to get into like some of the detractors and like maybe some issues with him as well, because I don't want to just be a full-on ideologue. Something really interesting is that just the change has happened so quick. So I came in September 15th. then that, I believe the first election was on October 15th around that time. And then the runoffs were in like November. And then most of the people I was talking to was like, yeah, he won't be able to make changes for another 2 years. It'll take him 2 years to kind of turn this around. And then something happened where either his administration turned it around and all of a sudden the peso law started to strengthen against the dollar, or some other thing in terms of maybe the United States dollar actually weakened, and all the stuff that the United States is doing that is now the same thing. That's basically the same thing that they did, that Argentina did in the 1960s and 1970s. And so what's your take on this? Like, what happened?
So in terms of the monetary base, it is still expanding, but not at such a fast rate as it was, because they were basically printing an additional monetary base every month and a half at the peak of the previous government. And they had so much interest and denominated liabilities in pesos that they were just like printing all that just in interest, just one additional monetary base. So that's how inflation completely spiraled out of control. And then Caputo and Milei took over, and they started to unwind that whole debt bomb basically very quickly. And the result of that is that the inflation is of course still going strong, but already month over month it's already dropping. And in terms of the peso is actually strengthening against the dollar because of all those actions that they're taking. People just don't have that urge to have a flight to the dollar basically. One thing that is also happening, and this is also due to inflation, is that a lot of people have to sell some of their dollar savings in order to fund their peso lifestyle now, because it's just a lot more expensive. So it is hollowing out like savings if people don't make that much money, and that is basically also strengthening the peso, because the demand side is now more on the peso end versus the dollar.
It would have been such a good bet to transfer a bunch of dollars when it was 1300 to pesos, but
I've seen that bet like a few times, and it's just over time it's always the best thing not to bet on
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Short
the
term, maybe if you can think, but that's the same thing with crypto as well. It's just like if you're in it for short term, you probably aren't smart enough to figure out things, like not you specifically, but any of us. Some people are smart enough to make those trades and good enough at finance and have that intuition built already, but it's very rare that somebody has that. So it's the same thing with crypto. It's just like, yeah, and that brings into mind that crypto is also happening, and I feel like it's so interesting to, because I part of the reason I wanted to spend some time here was to figure out what happens with inflation. What does it do to someone's mind? And it has been so interesting to experience it now, because I saw it from the other end, where I was watching Argentines have real major economic challenges, which of course affect their mental health. And then now all of a sudden it's on me. And it's like the now this thing that I thought was easier is now, and so like a price of a taxi doubled in price for me, and I was in the United States seeing that happen at 10%, 20%, and like, whoa, that's crazy. And then now to see it here is really interesting, and then all with the intention of understanding, well, can the US dollar and Bitcoin have a similar relationship as peso to the dollar? And it does seem like that is also happening in the US. I'd love to get your take on Bitcoin.
I think the main difference there is that Bitcoin can't be manipulated in terms of issuance. So the big thing, which is why a lot of people also have critique about Milei, is that if you do away with the central bank, then you cannot do these kind of things, which is basically stop it, issuing money, or changing that curve, et cetera, and influencing like how expensive your country is. It just gives you some levers of control. Versus giving it away and dollarizing, for example, and depending on the Fed, because then you don't have those kind of levers anymore. But I do think from my experience here, and what Milei has said about dollarization for Argentina, it's basically competing currencies. So it wouldn't be like installing a legal tender that people have to use the dollar. But you know, de facto, it would mean that everybody would just use dollars here because that's what they're already doing for higher denominated items like real estate, cars, etc. That's all denominated in dollar terms, and you can see it now in the rental market as well. Like a lot of rentals are now just directly in dollars because they don't want to deal with the peso anymore. And you can still pay a lot of those items in pesos, converted at the daily exchange rate. The same for cars and less so for properties. But yeah, I think that his idea is just to get away, do away with the printer, because if once his administration leaves, then they'll just, you know, start it all over again and they'll start printing and it will be the same story because it's been the same for 80 years, more or less.
So interesting. So you've taught me a lot in your tweets about the decree. I had heard about the decrees, and I was wondering how Malay would actually do what he did, and he did it all. Or it's seeming that he's been doing it all by decree, executive decree that kind of bypasses Congress. But in order to get that central bank part, he's probably waiting until he builds up the political momentum. And I know from reading your tweets and doing other research that basically he once the omnibus bill failed. He was like, wasn't me, it was those guys. Look at those guys. They failed it, which is what the other side was so good at in the previous time somebody's tried to change, is that as soon as somebody tried to do what Malay is doing, they would just be like, well, look, he's making everything in your life more expensive. Look at him. He's the one. And so now he's flipping it around on him and saying, okay, you guys did it. But then in order to get that central bank dissolved, he would need to go through Congress, right?
So yes, if he wants to dissolve it completely, that could only be done basically by a constitutional change, I think, because it says in the Constitution that the nation has the right or has to have a central bank basically that issues currency. But there are other ways of shutting it down, not completely. So, you know, the institution will still exist on paper. And that is, for example, if they were to use what is called a peso ley, which is a currency that is tied to gold. And that is used in legal contracts only, usually only just in public administration. It's not like a currency that is actually used in practice. But it's more for contracts. And, you know, they could basically dissolve the peso and they just use that gold-backed peso for, you
Oh,
know, having a currency in the central bank, but not a currency that they can actually print.
yeah, okay, interesting. And I imagine that that would be able to, like, once the next administration comes in, they would probably be able to flip that really easily, right?
That's the thing, yeah. So, I mean, it's not watertight. So, if they do that, then the next government could always like turn it, you know, back on. That's what I think, at least.
Yeah, and this all making me think that a guest I should look for now is some sort of Argentine constitutional lawyer who also happens to like doing podcasts, which might be like maybe two in the whole country. Well, actually, this is a good question for you. I want to interview them to understand more about what you just said and all the different variables are into it. And then I forgot the question that I just had. But that's really interesting. Do you know any constitutional lawyers?
Actually, not directly. No, I know some of them, because they appear online and they do have some conflicting views. Like some say that it is constitutional, others to close the central bank, and others say that it's not. So there's not really consensus around that theme.
And I think that's also a sort of theme in Argentina, not only in Argentina, this happens in a lot of countries where in the US we have this system, and I probably in the Netherlands you probably also have systems which are, you know, they're laws, they're the rules, and people pay attention to the rules, and as long as people are paying attention to the rules work. Whereas in a lot of other countries, the rule as written down on paper is much more fungible, much more able to be changed, and a lot of times it's like, do you know the guy who knows the guy?
Yes.
And that's the way you get things done. But at this level, the presidential level, I'm sure that's also the way things get done, but it's also something Malay is talking about actually removing. And that seems like a huge challenge in itself, particularly with the governors and the battle between the federal and the the province level government. What's your take on all that?
Yeah, I think that's a fight that we're seeing now in real time, and it's going to take a while for them to fight it out. And I think that is why he proposed to do a sort of May pact, so around the 25th of May, which is a symbolic day for Argentina because it was like the first constitutional government, et cetera. So he wants to do it on that day. Plus, it also gives him time, 2 more months, to let the provinces run out of money, basically. So they're going to be more desperate to reach an understanding with the federal government by that time. And if they don't, yeah, basically he's saying if you do not vote the omnibus bill, all bets are off before the May pact even. So it's really sort of like a threat in disguise, like this whole thing that they're talking about now. It was just so amazing to see that the main points that the deputies voted against in the omnibus bill were all related to funds and how transparent funding was for provinces, et cetera. And there's like a ton of trust funds that they have billions of dollars in them, and nobody knows like how they're spent exactly. So Milei, with the omnibus bill, wanted to change that, so it all becomes like very transparent. They all voted against it, and then basically he nuked the bill. He said like, "Look, if this is not going to go through, we're not going to, vote on any kind of article anymore. We're just going to nuke it." And now all funding is off.
Oh man, this is why I'm so excited about it, is because it finally feels like an adult is in the room.
Yes.
And I'm not speaking just about Argentina, I'm speaking about the whole world. Is that there are seemingly just immature people in old people's bodies running around doing all this weird shit. And then now we finally got an adult in the room. And this is the most interesting thing for me, because it relates to 2020, all the changes that went on in 2020. Before 2020, I was into 2016. I voted for Hillary Clinton. I'm not sure how ashamed I should be of it now, but and then by once Trump won, I was just like, oh man, my worldview is kind of maybe not that accurate. Maybe I should look at it. And then slowly, I started to realize, oh, my worldview is not accurate at all. And then by 2020, I was just like, oh man. What the hell happened? Like, I thought all these people were adults, and they're not. They're just like psychopaths, sociopaths, immature people. And so then now we've got a situation where there's somebody, a total outsider. Actually, this is a great question for you, because you've been following this for a lot longer. When did Milei actually become a relevant political candidate?
I think that was around 2020. He's been making his appearances on TV, in various talk shows and other kind of TV shows. I think since 2014. So he's had like a 6 year run up that he was always like the weird guy and the guy screaming in the media. And you've all seen those videos where he talks about left turds or whatever. That was basically his persona. He was just like a very explicit guy, always, kind of like a parody almost of an Austrian economist. And of course he's also an economist, so he does really know his stuff. And then around 2020, I think it was that he said like, look, if nobody's going to change things, I think I'm going to try it and give it a try, and I'm just going to kick everybody out and reform the whole thing. And it caught on, especially with younger people, and he got more and more support. He was voted in office as a deputy, and then basically I think it was a year and a half before the elections he said like, I'm going to run for president. And still, up until the primaries, everybody was like, dude, this guy is going to get like what, 2% of the votes? Or nobody thought that he would actually get like, 30%, that he would like win the first runoff between the internal candidates. And then, in the second part where the elected candidates ran for president, it was almost like by a 3% miss that Massa won the elections. If he would have won with 3% more, he would have been president like in the first round. And I think everybody got so scared shitless of that that in the end, like, they voted massively for Milei because it was, one of the highest vote count for any candidate. Of course, there are more, more citizens now versus like back in the day with Peron, who also have like percentage-wise a higher vote. But it was still pretty massive to have 56% and 14 million Argentines vote for him. So I still think he has a lot of support, but I just hope that the inflation doesn't drag on much longer without salaries catching up, because I think then he's going to quickly lose
Yeah.
support from middle class, especially.
Interesting. So it all comes down to the salary, and I think that agrees. Yeah, the purchasing power. Super interesting. There's so much here. The old guard, the Bullrich, the people who tried to do things. I might have mistaken Bullrich as one of the people who was on that side, but because there's been other people who've tried this before, and this is what all the Argentines tell me is that like. We've seen it all before. This guy is just another one. He's a little bit more eccentric, but he's just another one. So like that old guard, they're all part of the elite, right? And I guess Milei is also part of the elite. Like I think he's at U University of Buenos Aires. Was he an economist at University of Buenos Aires or another university?
I think he was an economist at a private university.
Got it. Okay. So, but he was part of the elite basically, but he's not really a political contender. And I
Yeah,
imagine,
he
yeah.
was never a political figure, and he gave a lot of presentations where they would just pay his speeches, et cetera, internationally. And his main income is from his books. That's one of his big sources of income.
That's so interesting. And then the old guard, the political elite who have tried to do things, who are the most noteworthy people that we should pay attention in that arena?
So yeah, he's been criticized a lot for joining forces so much with ex-Macri
Macri,
people.
that's it. Yeah.
Bullrich is from the Macri camp, and Petri, the Minister of Defense. And then let's see, there's some other figureheads that popped up because he does need to have like a stronger coalition, because that was his main thing. He didn't have any infrastructure at all. Basically, he had two seats in deputies, and that was it. And now, of course, there's a little bit more, but still not enough to push anything through on the legislation side. So he does need a lot more consensus, and he does find that with the mock people from Macri. But there was also like a lot of people from that old guard that voted against certain stuff in the omnibus law if it went against their interests. Now, one person that I think has done a stellar job is Caputo. He was also the Minister of Economy during Macri, and he's doing things a lot differently, because he's a typical banker guy. He can get it done. Basically, he can get funding. He also,
Interesting.
yeah, he got the IMF loan in 2018, which a lot of people were against, and it was definitely not a great decision because of the whole situation. They were doing gradualism and not changing anything,
Yeah,
and
interesting.
expanding the state and basically getting that IMF loan to fund it even more and make sure that Macri won the election, which he lost. So back then, I think his hands were also sort of tied with the whole policy direction that the Macri government was going. So I don't think Caputo could have done things a whole lot differently. He was just trying to save the last kind of parts with that additional loan. But now he's really steering the course exactly the way Milei wants it. So people may criticize, like, look, he's hanging around with all these old guys that have been in politics forever, but the what they're doing now is like 180% different from degrees different from what they were doing under Macri. So I do see that as a positive change. Everybody's sort of on board with the shock therapy versus gradualism, and I think that's like the most important change. I mean, the things we've seen in the last 3 months, and it's not even, I don't think it's a full 3 months yet, of Milei, it's just like astounding everything that's been done.
Yeah, this is the interesting part about politics is that it's, we have political entrepreneurs, and those political entrepreneurs They have the Overton windows, and they have, depending on the democratic consensus of the population, can make certain changes. And it's all about momentum, and it's win after win after win. And it currently looks like there's no stopping this administration. Like, it's just going to continue to win. Yeah, and then the sal then that brings us back to the salary component of how to actually rise salaries for, and that, like, this is the interesting thing about the kind of invisible hand economics type of stuff, is just there's all these changes that happen emergently. For my listeners who don't know, emergence is when it's sort of, oh man, I just got myself into a hole of how to describe emergence. The process of coming into view or becoming exposed after being concealed, the process of coming into being or of being important or prominent. Those feel like sort of definitions that are more philosophical, but emergence is also a very important part of evolution, where you have a new species that emerges. For example, the Homo sapiens out of the Neanderthals, or not out of the Neanderthals, but in competition with the Neanderthals. And so we've got a political entrepreneur who's got momentum, who's doing all these things, and then the economics of it are all sort of this emergent thing, this property, and then the prices are rising, and the salaries aren't rising. They're rising a little bit, and I talk with so many Argentines who are working coffee shops and all these things, and their lives are getting really tough, because I think, as one tweet that you mentioned, is that we're at the lowest point at which the salaries don't match how expensive things are. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think it's we're at the lowest point right before the 2001 crisis, and that just spiraled completely out of control back then. It was just so much social unrest because of that, people started to riot, et cetera. So we're really at a boiling point where if this doesn't change within the next 2 months, I don't think people will take it as easily as they've done so far.
And that, but it, and it also seems like there may not be very many tools that Milei's administration has to change that, because it's the emergent thing. It's like he's not going to go to all the way the leftists would usually do this, is be like, okay, well, now we're going to do a planned economy. We're going to centralize it all under one thing, and we'll make shit happen under this centralized thing. But that's, like, not going to happen. And it doesn't work anyway. What's your take on how to actually change it?
Well, I mean, here, there is a role for the unions in that sense because, well, traditionally they do that. They sit with the government, et cetera, and with the sector people to sort of get across a standardized raise for the whole sector. So, there's people in the commercial sector have a certain union, and it's all like very much sectorized, and they all get different raises. So, so far, I think that should happen this month.
Okay, got it. Yeah, interesting.
So we'll
So,
see what comes out of that.
and are there any political entrepreneurs among the unions who are starting to see the writing on the wall and be like, okay, instead of fighting this guy, maybe we can help with him? Do you know of anything going on in that sense?
Well, some younger guys
Yeah,
have said that. They say, like, look, we can understand that people voted this way, and what have unions actually done for people, especially during the previous administration? They never stepped up for salaries, and the salaries got like utterly crushed. I think it was at least a 50% decrease in dollar terms during that administration for most salaries. So. They never said anything back then. They never had a single strike. And during COVID, it was just like, okay, yeah, because the government was basically in bed with these guys and just maintaining their positions, their privileges. So they didn't really have to do anything. And now, like, I think it was the quickest general strike in history against Milei, and because they basically see their livelihood threatened, because these guys don't do that all that much except for sitting around and seeing what kind of business they can do by feeding off the taxpayer.
Oh man, it's so interesting. It's such a laboratory for the whole world right now. There's this great quote that I went to the opera on Sunday, the Teatro Colón, and with my Argentine friend, and they were talking, and they mentioned a quote, which is that there's four types of countries. There's developed countries, there are developing countries, and then there's Japan and Argentina.
Okay.
And so and it's so true. Japan was the main example I knew of beforehand of just like this thing that transcends the category, that try kind of proves the category as well. And then now I'm seeing that Argentina is also something that transcends the Western model of business and was Western model of governance. But then it also kind of proves that, and that's why it's the perfect laboratory for what's going on right now. I don't have a specific
Yeah.
follow-up question yet. Go for it.
Well, and it is funny that you mentioned your Hillary vote, because the when I came here, I was like very much from coming from a Marxist framework university in Western Europe, literature, a lot of Marxist academia around it, etc. So when I first came here and I saw what the Kirchners were doing. Like from my point of view, that made sense. I was like, yeah, this is good. Left wing and trying to give back to the people, etc. So I was really on board with that. Same with Lula in Brazil. I thought it was all like, yeah, this is a good change and probably for the better. And back then, I really got involved in certain political arenas with Peronism, etc. And I went to help kids from the neighborhood, etc. With the militants. So I was really like inside the organization too for a while. And then that was a point when I started seeing like I don't know probably two-thirds of the people were there to try to get some benefit politically or try to get higher up the ladder in the organization or try to get some position in the state, anything basically. And then of course, like another third more or less was really genuine and wanted to help people. But the main driver was, doing good, so to say, but actually trying to do good for yourself. And I got a little bit disillusioned, so I stopped, being actively involved there. And then over time, like feeling the impact of inflation, and after setting up my own business here, because I went from a peso salary to starting up my own company locally and hiring people, and then seeing like the nightmare that it is when you fire someone and the employee is always right, and there's this whole army of lawyers just waiting to sue you dry to
Whoa.
suck. Yeah. I just basically had to shut down the company and because basically all the savings were gone. And then I just sat down, thought hard, and I said, well, look, do I want to leave Argentina because it's so hard? And I was just like, yeah, no, but I do have to change something drastically. Otherwise, I'm just going to be miserable because it's so hard to survive. So then I shifted like my whole business to the US, basically US clients, everything in English and LLC. And I've been doing that ever since. And that was one of the best decisions I made. And that completely changed, my standard of life here. And, I was able to suddenly start buying property, et cetera. And before that, I was just barely getting by. So yeah,
This
it's and that also came with the shift of, getting more interested in Bitcoin, reading Austrian economics, and that completely flipped my sort of Marxist framework to like a more libertarian framework where I just saw through the bullshit of what I used to believe was right,
So many questions that come from that. All right. So the first is back at that time. So the people waiting in the rafters to sue you. I was under the impression that Argentina is not a litigious country like the United States, that not a lot of things get done legally. Is that an accurate assumption, or is it actually things wrong?
Well, from civilian cases, yes. So, if anything happens in the street or with your neighbors, etc., that usually never ends up in court. But employees to employers, it's like the biggest industry around in legal terms. Because the lawyers get a 20% cut out of any indemnization that is that results from those lawsuits. And basically anybody who's fired will just like try to sue just in case because they can always get something additionally. And just so you have a you have the an idea of like how ridiculous it is, after 3 months, and this is also something that Milei changed, by the way, with his deregulation decree at the start. But this part is held up in court because the labor union started crying about it. But basically, after 3 months, somebody is you hire is a it becomes a permanent employee. So you have a 3 month trial period, and after that, they become permanent. So once you fire them after that, then like the fees are a lot higher to do that. And then, but what usually happens with not everybody, I would say like a smaller percentage, but it does happen, is that people like really do their best like the first 3 months, and then afterwards they slack. And that was something that happened with one guy at my company as well. So then, like after 7 months, we were just like, yeah, this is not going to work. So we're going to have to let you go, blah, blah, blah. And the dude just like next day, it was like a telegram and like suing our company. And basically, we also, our lawyer said, like, look, you're going to have to settle with this guy because he's going to win, because he had like some proof that we paid a part of his salary, which he asked for. We paid that like under the table. And he had proof that we did that because we sent it to a PayPal address. So he had that, like he could say like, okay, they were paying me a part of my salary like off the books, and here's my proof. And the lawyer said, yeah, there's not a whole lot we can do about against that claim because he has that paper trail. And so we ended up settling for 7 additional months of salary. And that was like the best they could do.
So the talk about incentives, the lawyer getting 20% take, just like how to incentivize a shark. That's how you do it.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing with inheritance, by the way. That's why I really want to make sure that my inheritance is rock solid to my daughters, because I just don't want a lawyer ending up with a bunch of properties just because he does my inheritance case, once I die.
And so is there a way that a foreign LLC, like a LLC in the United States, can own property in Argentina or own a business?
Yes, although the taxes are a lot higher
Got
for
it.
moving the property afterwards or selling it. Yeah, the one thing, well, I mean, if you're not like actively a resident here, I'm not sure how that works in terms of inheritance. But yeah, you would probably need a lawyer as well. That's the thing, you cannot do this on your own. You need a lawyer, and lawyers, they charge anything from 12 to 20%. So if it's like a nice inheritance, they end up with one apartment at least.
Whoa, that's a good
Yeah.
gig. It's good.
Yeah. I mean,
Well,
the lawyers and politicians, that's like the two best jobs you can have in Argentina.
interesting, which is very symbolic. So okay, well, and hopefully this isn't too personal a question. Are you a resident or are you a citizen?
No, I am currently still a resident because I wanted to waitlist citizenship because the Netherlands is kind of hard with dual citizenship. But since I'm married now, I can get it, and it's that's one of the exceptions. You can have dual citizenship if you're married. So, but I just wanted to make sure that first I give the Dutch citizenship to my daughters as well, and then next time I'm going to renew my passport, and then afterwards I'm going to get citizenship, because only when I renew again, I will have to tick that box where I say, like, yes, I have another passport, and then I have to, show all kinds of documents. So I just want
Yeah, got it.
to postpone that a little bit.
It is a wild thing about the world that we live in, and the global nature and the remote work is just like all these rules were set up for a world
Yeah.
where everybody was not going to another country because it was so complicated, which only existed after 1880. Like, we didn't have passports before 1880. Like, everybody could just go wherever they wanted. Like, and so now we've got the system that's just totally not applicable anymore. And you just have to learn the bureaucracy so well.
Yeah.
So I imagine you got residency as a part of marrying your
Yeah.
second wife.
No, my first wife actually, because she was Brazilian, so
Mercosul.
Mercosur. Yeah, she got residency, and then I sort of hopped on her residency, and after 3 years, I got permanent residency.
And I know I've gotten a
Yeah.
lot of insight from you on this particular situation, which is like the residency is very, very complicated, but it is possible. And I'm interested in it, not only that, but also the passport. Like, what do you what's the biggest tip you can give for somebody in my situation, or other people who want to tie their life to Argentina?
So yeah, I think getting the rentista visa is probably your best bet, because it's not that crazy. You have to, I think right now it's like 1500 to 2000 bucks a month. You have to sort of show that you have that passive income. It doesn't have to be completely passive, or you can make it passive through like an additional company. And the positive thing is that you only have to deposit that money in pesos every single month on a bank account, but you can do that in cash. So basically, you don't have to wire that money every single month. You can basically just reuse the same money every single month, as long as you have to deposit it every single month, and you need to show those slips to the migrations officer if you go to renew the visa.
It's so interesting. And by overstaying a tourist visa, does that do, well, this is a great question for you. Do you think, because I saw whispers, and it might have actually been from you, is that Malay's administration was starting to kick out Brazilians who didn't have a were hadn't gone through the residency program. And I'm kind of getting the hint that basically that the current situation where a bunch of foreigners come here and just live on the tourist visa and overextend their tourist visa is going to change. And so I want to make a change before that happens. What's your take on that? Do you think that that's actually going to happen?
Well, yeah, I think they're gonna become more strict, and I thought that would already happen during Macri, but it never really happened. Overall, Argentina is super lax with overstaying your visas versus Brazil. I remember, like, in Brazil, they would always count like all the days that I'd been in Brazil and see like how many days they would still give me and stuff. They're super strict with that stuff. And here it's just like, okay, here's the fine. I think it's like 50 bucks, and then you just go over the border, come back, and like no questions asked,
But that might change, basically.
I think that will eventually change, yes, because I think in the case of the Brazilians, it was very clear that they were going to attend university, and for them it's also so easy. You The only thing you need is like your birth certificate, a criminal record, and their ID, and that's the only thing they need. They just need to go take an appointment, go to the migrations office, and then they get permanent residency right away. That's like the only. It's the only Mercosur country that gets permanent residency just by showing up in Argentina.
Oh man, I love Brazil. I love Argentina. It's so ridiculous. Oh man, there's a great question there. I forgot. Oh man, I lost it. Yeah. Oh no, it's I'll share the story of what happened to me in Brazil. So in 2020, I didn't like what was going on with the pandemic stuff, particularly in California, and so once I saw, I gave it a couple months. I was like, okay, let's see how the lockdowns go, and then didn't do anything. And then once they went from 2 weeks to a month, I was like, oh man, like this is just ridiculous. And so I was like, okay, I see that Brazil's open. Brazil's still open. They're a thing. I'm gonna go to Brazil. I went to Brazil. Such a good idea. I'm so glad I did it. But then I was in Curitiba, one of my favorite cities up in Brazil, and living there, really comfortable, doing all the things I love doing. And I talked to my friend who tells me about an immigration lawyer, and I'm like, oh, I got to do that. I've got 3 months. I got to get to the 6 months. And so then I go to the Brazilian, or I call this lawyer, and the lawyer is like, ah, don't worry about it. They extended it because of the pandemic. Don't worry at all. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to overstay. And then I overstayed, and I got to the airport, an hour before my flight, and the customs guy pulls me over. He's like, you've overstayed 100 and whatever days. And then I'm like, yeah, but they told me that. And I was like, well, that changed. And so they gave me a bill of $1,500, which of course I couldn't pay because I need to pay it inside of Brazil. So I would have had to then miss my flight in order to pay for the bill. And then I get to the States with this giant bill that I'm like, how the hell do I, what do I do? Can I go back to Brazil? But then the pandemic kept on going in California, and they locked down again, even a year and a half later during the summer, which is like, come on, guys, it's summer. Or no, oh, sorry, it was going to the winter. So it was going into the winter. I was like, I don't want to spend a winter lockdown by myself again. And then so I was like, okay, I'll go to Brazil again. And so then I got to the and but by that time, Brazil, they had gone against Bolsonaro's decree saying no vaccination thing. And so they were technically checking vaccination, And so but then I got there, and in order to prove my vaccination, I just showed them a slip of paper that didn't have anything on it, and the guy was like, "Oh, okay, go." And then they didn't charge me any money. They didn't actually ask for that money. They just let me through the visa, and
Oh,
so
wow.
I was like, "Okay, I'm through. Like, I'm out of the system." But then I come back to the United States, and then this time when I got to Brazil, they're like, "Yeah, you owe $1,500. How will that be, cash or check?" And then they take me over to the thing, and they make me pay the whatever money. And now I've got this record on my Brazilian visa, which I believe is the responsible for me not being allowed to stay longer.
Oh yeah, definitely. They once you get a stain like that, they will always look twice at your record. I
And
had the
this
same thing where I lost the I
piece of
lost I
paper.
think the piece of paper, and that was just like a huge issue when I left the country. And they said like, well, it's not a big deal. Just like the next time you enter the country, you're not gonna have to pay a fee or something. And then the next time when I arrived, it was they almost stamped my passport, and then they looked again at the screen. It's like, oh no, you have to go to the police now. And then they sort of held me up, and I had to pay the fine or whatever. So
It's so crazy, and I know
yeah.
I've now kept that piece of paper. I'm never losing that piece of paper. I hope
No,
I
that's
haven't lost
very
it.
important to not lose.
And this is part of my infinite, or my constant battle. My white whale is to get back into Brazil, and now I've figured out a few sneaky ways that to do it. But one of them that I will mention is that is if I get Argentine or Paraguayan residency, then all those problems seem to go away. Is that accurate?
Well, I mean, as a non-medical sewer citizen, they're still going to ask for your original passport. Brazil does. Uruguay and Paraguay, they don't. So you can just like, well, they could ask for it, but they never do. So once they see your Argentine DNI, your ID, then they're just fine and they'll let you in. But Brazil is actually, I only once entered just with my Argentine DNI, and all the other times they asked for my Dutch passport as well.
Is the one time it worked because of a particular border?
No, it was all on São Paulo.
Fascinating.
I think once you get the Argentine passport, then if you show a
Yeah, okay,
passport,
got
then it's
it.
done.
Okay. That's the real thing. That's the ultimate moral of the story, is get the second passport, but it's not exactly an easy thing to get a second passport. Well,
Well, I
thank you
mean,
so much.
if you stay long enough here, then it is basically.
Okay, yeah, let's go into that real quickly, because I've read at various times that if I stay here 2 years, even if it's illegally, that I'll be granted citizenship.
Yeah, so in the Constitution, it says for any inhabitant that inhabits the territory of Argentina for 2 years, has the right to citizenship. And it doesn't matter if you're here illegally or if you
Whoa.
are on a visa. The judge who decides if you get citizenship or not is basically going to look at your ties to the country, if you have property here, maybe kids or whatever, or if you've been here the whole time. And his ability to check if you've been here the whole time, if you just haven't left and you have that stamp in the passport, is basically showing that you have. But you do have a much stronger case if you have residency officially.
Got it.
But like, there's loads of Russians right now. They just arrive on a tourist visa, have a baby, overstay their visa, and within a year and a half, they get an appointment, they get citizenship. Like, the kid is Argentine, and it's like enough to get it. So they don't even need to get a visa.
Best
And
loophole in
it,
the world.
yes, and I know a lawyer that specializes in rotating judges. So what he does is like, okay, I know that in Buenos Aires there's like eight judges. These two are always a problem. So if you get one of these two, then we'll just get like another appointment with another one, and just make sure you get
Great. Brilliant. Thank you for so much for coming on the show. How can people find out more about what you're working on?
I'm very active on Twitter, so you can just follow me at Bowtied Mara. I also have a blog where I write about everything that's going on in Argentina, and how to, if you feel like investing or buying real estate here, that is bowtiedmara.io. That's basically where I share all my thoughts. If you're interested, you can also book an appointment for a one-on-one consultation. That's on the .com, because I have both domains. So yeah, if you want, just get in touch. And yeah, it's always fun to talk to people who want to move here and see it as a great option.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Stuart Alsop III. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes for every weekly episode that I publish on Monday mornings. Hope you have a great day.